This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Thank you for joining us. Here's Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis with MSU Women's Basketball Coach Susie Merchant.
We're pleased to welcome Coach Susie Merchant. I was asked the other day about roles of presidents. And I said that I was fortunate to inherit Tom Izzo, because Tom and I have been at Michigan State for eons, that I was able to hire Susie Merchant as my women's basketball coach, Mark D'Antonio as football coach, and Mark Hollis as the athletic director. So I thought I had sort of checked that box as something president should do. And so we're so pleased that you're a part of Michigan State.
Oh, thank you. I love being here. No question about it.
So tell me, for as you think about women's basketball, what's the biggest surprise coming to Michigan State?
The outside element of the job, just the external piece to the job, and then trying to balance that with family as well as, you know, staying up with recruiting. And, you know, that's going to change again for us. We've added new women's basketball rules that are going to amplify the head coach's role of getting out, making more contact. So for me, it's really trying to fill all those roles sometimes at once, and that's where things get a little bit dicey. But, you know, the nice thing about being part of Team MSU is that your family is included in so many of the things that you're able to do. So that makes it much, much easier. And I talk to other women in my position, and sometimes it's not like that at other universities. So thank you for allowing.
I love your stories about recruiting out of the back of your car, and you make the transition on to Eastern and then here to Michigan State. And I think, you know, many people say, well, the job's easier because you have a lot more people to help you and a lot more people to pick up the specialization, where as a head coach at a smaller school, you kind of did everything by yourself. But the hard part is you have to manage all those people. And in many cases, that becomes as big of a challenge as doing things on your own. Do you find that same?
Oh, my gosh, that's my number one thing. That's what I said to the business school when we had that opportunity to connect with them, when they asked, one of my biggest weaknesses is that, you know, and you've mentioned this before, you get on the treadmill, you put your blinders up, and you just go when there's a job to be done. Especially in times of adversity or challenges, you know, I think I'm just kind of a go-getter, doer. Mm-hmm. And that gets me in trouble because I forget to take the people with me sometimes. And, you know, I have a goal or a vision in mind. And that's been my greatest challenge here at Michigan State, as you mentioned. I mean, I used to look down and say, okay, where's my staff? There wasn't one. It was just me.
So you could talk to you.
One, I never even had. Yeah, people thought I was crazy, which I am. I'm a head coach, so I am crazy. But that's been my greatest challenge, to be honest, is just really being a better delegator, a better communicator, and have really invested in that, though, actually, in the off season and this last year of my life, have really tried to slow down a little bit. And we really use the month of May in the basketball world to evaluate what we're doing well, what we're not doing well, where I can be better as a manager. And that's exactly right, Mark. It's really hard. I look around and I have nine managers. I mean, I couldn't even get one at my last job, and we have nine.
It really is. If you can harness the strength of one, you're so much stronger as any organization. Mm. And we talk about it between athletics and the university. I think it's between the university and the state. And that just continues is, you know, sometimes you have to step back and realize the good that you are doing and those that want to be there to help and to push. And they have their own personal agendas as well. But if you can unify them overall with a general strategy, it just makes the organization itself that much stronger.
I think that it's easy for people to see wins and losses, and success can be defined by getting to the NCAA tournament, doing this and doing that. But that's not necessarily what constitutes a great coach or a great coach in a place like Michigan State. It's all of these things. And so, as you said, you have to constantly get better, like you want your student-athletes to get better, and you have to model that behavior. And it is sometimes hard when you're so pressed to step back and reflect for any of us.
Well, that's true. And I think the one thing that surprised me the most about myself when I really looked back, and this happened in this last year, and I think it was a big reason maybe why we had some success this year when we could have maybe taken a different turn, was that you get so pressed, you get so busy, you're pulled in so many different directions, that the thing that got me in this profession that I love the most was the relationships with the players and being a mentor and making an impact. And then as you get going and they've got schedules and I've got schedules, you forget that they're the most important people to actually winning and losing. And so this last year is really slowing down and investing and spending more time and saying no to a lot more things, because I needed to say yes to Clarissa Bell and Madison Williams and Tracy Nogle. I mean, it didn't matter if they were the walk-on or the star. Everybody needed value and needed my time, and I really tried to do more of that this year.
But I do think the success this year came from being able to I'll use the word connect, because we use connect a lot here, that to connect with individuals in ways that you got out of them on the court probably more than even they imagined. And they came together really as a team in ways that no one else imagined because of that sort of taking time to connect with them.
Well, I agree. And probably the biggest hurdle for me was Jasmine Thomas going into the season, as we weren't going to have Kiana, knowing that I was going to put our success in the hands of Jasmine Thomas, who her and I have been, you know, not on the same page most of her career, her prior 3 years. And so she humbled me this year in so many ways. And I really figured out that all I had to do was speak her language. And it's not really that hard if you invest in them in a way that brings out the best in them. And sometimes as a coach, we get going, or as a leader, you get going, you have your own personality, your own ways. Her and I couldn't be farther off the page in terms of personalities. And one thing I learned is that sometimes extroverts really attract introverts. And that kid's about as introverted as they come, and I'm about as extroverted as they come. So we weren't on the same page. And I think a large part of our success was that I figured out how to tone down, and she kind of figured out how to step forward too, and we kind of met in the middle.
But that's a pretty good parenting lesson. So you've got these two boys that are probably not as easy to manage as they were a little bit ago when they were smaller.
Yes. Well, I've learned that there's battles that you fight and ones you don't. Like going to bed in cowboy wellies and a Captain America shield is not that big of a deal compared to if you hit your brother. So, you know, there's things that I'm willing to step in.
You got it easy. You can still play man to man.
That's true.
One more, you got to go zone.
I know. Well, we won't go there. I'm a very man to man principled coach, as you can tell.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
And you're listening to a conversation between MSU women's basketball coach Susie Merchant, Spartans athletic director Mark Hollis, and Michigan State University president Luana K. Simon.
As you think about women's basketball, and we're all having this conversation 5 years from now, how do you think the sport's going to change?
Well, it has to evolve. I think we've just been stagnant for the last 5, 6, 7 years. I think I'm really excited about the NCAA's initiative to get involved with Val Ackerman, who's going to, you know, have an opportunity. He's done a lot of research, a very knowledgeable person from, you know, cross seas, obviously, in her European and FIBA relationships, obviously, with the WNBA and the current state, and just figure out where we have to go. There's so many different unique concepts that we're talking about women's basketball, none obviously coming to fruition, but I don't think anything's off the table right now. So in some ways, it's a very exciting time. As the sport grew too fast, really, before it was really ready in some aspects. And now we have to take a step back. And what made us successful was grassroots, was the glad handing, speaking to 80 to 100 people, turning around, going to the next 80 to 100, going to 20. I mean, it didn't matter. You just wanted people in the stands. And now how do we continue that with the elements of the television piece, which is fantastic, but it also allows our demographic folks who tend to be maybe on the retiree side or the young families to be able to stay home and watch the Spartans play without having to come actually to Breslin. So how do we continue that? And I also think we're up against the men so many times, too. And we, in our game, have to get away from modeling ourselves after the men's game. I think it's apples and oranges. It's the same sport, per se, but it's not the same in so many ways. And I think when the men do something, we feel like we have to go ahead and do that. And some of these rules are generated out of fear. Quite honestly, I believe that we don't really know sometimes what's best for our sport. So because the men have done this access, summer access, because the men have done earlier contact, we feel like we have to. And I'm not saying it's bad and I'm against all of it. There's really pieces of it I really enjoy and I'm excited about. But I just think we get caught up in a little of that. So the state of the game, I think, really needs to be looked at. And with that connection with Val Ackerman, I'm really excited about what she has to bring.
Very much relevant. And, you know, you go into Breslin now and it's the crowds are fantastic. Mm-hmm. The coverage by the Big Ten Network is fantastic. But I do appreciate also what Susie's saying is it's a different game. It's a different demographic. And we need to make sure that as an athletic department, we're everything to everybody. And that's what it gives us the ability to do.
Yeah. Don't you get tired of the coverage just waiting for somebody to dunk the ball without appreciating the game?
Yes. Yes. I mean, I just every tweet is Brittany Griner dunked twice in her opening debut or whatever, her WNBA game. And, yeah, that gets a little bit annoying in some ways because there's so many great parts to our game and none of them are above the rim except for one person out of all the people basically right now in general that can do it pretty consistently. So it does get a little trivial, but, you know, it's part of what we do, you know, is educating people. That's our job, is to continue to educate and promote and get them interested in our student athletes or the WNBA. Any way we can help as college coaches promote that organization, it's important to do.
So what does next season look like for you?
We're excited about next season. I tell you what, I have paid my dues on the injury bug, so I am planning on a 100% healthy team. And, you know, actually we're trying to do some innovative things this off season to try to eliminate some of the overuse injuries. And hopefully that will pay off. You never know. But, you know, we really feel good about everybody we have coming back. I always believe that, you know, where your leaders and captains take you is, you know, indicative of how your season goes. So this year, you know, we have Clarissa Bell, who was a captain for us last year, as well as right now, Annalise Pickerel and Kiana are taking the step forward this summer with me as the overseer and evaluator of captain leadership. So I'm not sure that will be the group that takes us into the fall. But right now, those are the three right now that are trying to lead the pack here. So I'm hopeful. I do like some of our leadership pieces, but there's some maturity and some growth that has to take place amongst those three for our team to take the next step. But we talk about national championship. You know, I kid all the time about I walk in every day and I look to the right and I see Munn Ice Arena and there's a couple national titles in there, a few in there. And then I come into my left and there's a couple over there. And now Izzo so graciously is moving it right in the middle of the atrium. So now it's not to my right, my left. It's right in front of me. So it's, you know, I dream about that. And, you know, I've really aspired to want to bring that to a university, and especially Michigan State, this place you can do it at, and you can do it in your home state. And I just love to be able to bring that back to all of you.
As you mentor those three young women and the team in totality, who mentors you? Who do you lean on?
Well, actually, I've invested in myself more than I ever have in the last couple years, quite honestly, in this last year. You know, I have a person who is certified in the John Maxwell type leadership management because that was a weakness for me. And I've, you know, hired him to kind of come in and help counsel me a little bit to be a better manager and a leader. I rely a lot on some of the friendships in the coaching industry that I've built, whether it be USA Basketball or some in the Big Ten. And I think we have a fabulous resource in Dr. Lonnie Rosen here at Michigan State. He is spectacular for our athletes. But he's been someone that I feel like he helps me speak the language that I need to speak and sometimes center me a little bit in this crazy world of athletics. And he's a special person. And ironically, and you should know this, Mark, I don't think to me in women's basketball right now, there's a more valuable employee than Tim Wakeman, our strength and conditioning coach. Mm-hmm. He was new this year for us. Mm-hmm. And his involvement translated into probably 5 to 7 more wins for us this year. And the way he manages young women and understands their minds and then can help me, he is an absolute gem at Michigan State, and we're blessed to have him.
I do think, and for our listeners who have girls as a part of their, who want to have their young women participate in sport, I think finding people who don't just simply say women are built different, but we're going to do the same things. And that's typical of the experiences of young women, that there's always, you know, so that you're built differently, therefore that's why needs go bad, that's why this happens. There's always all those excuses. And what's great about him, and I think what has to happen for women in sport, is really the a sense that people are different, but there's a strength to being different.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, we can develop programs that will build on those strengths instead of seeing it as a deficit. You're not a guy, therefore, you're going to blow out your knee more often. And I think we do have in Tim a person who thinks that way. And, mm-hmm. Mark, you should be commended for finding him.
He's
spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
And really listening to those issues. And I think we can be something that as people who have girls and not boys, as Susie does, want their kids to participate in sport, that they need to also have a good ear for.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's really amazing. And he does just as much neck down as he does neck up. You know, and maybe this year more for us neck up than neck down, because most of our kids were injured. So there wasn't that many left. You know, he's spectacular.
Well, the great thing about him is he'll walk right in your office, sit down and go, "We need to talk."
Yep.
And he'll refocus you on big picture things, small picture. He's a great asset.
Yep. Absolutely.
Well, thanks. This has been great. I appreciate it.
I hope you have some fun over the summer and a little bit of relaxation before it all starts again.
Thank you.
You're listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
That was MSU Women's Basketball Coach Susie Merchant talking with Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis. To hear their conversation again, please visit SpartanPodcast.com. Up next, sports journalism is the topic, as MSU alumnus and Detroit Free Press Spartan Sports beat writer Joe Rexrode visits with President Simon and A.D. Hollis.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. We've all heard the expression, "It's all about who you know." And wherever you are on your career ladder, having a friend on the inside can make all the difference. When you join the MSU Alumni Association family, you're instantly connected to 500,000 Spartans around the world, many of whom are key decision makers in just about every major enterprise. Whether you're looking for a way in or a way up, your MSU Alumni Association affiliation can help you link up with that MSU alum who'll always take your call just because you're a Spartan. Building your network right now before you need it is the best possible career insurance, and joining the MSU Alumni Association is the best possible way to get the most out of your Spartan life. Learn more online at alumni.msu.edu. That's alumni.msu.edu. The MSU Alumni Association, your personal network for life.
The Michigan State University Department of Radiology is a leader in MRI, imaging research, and patient care. From world-class research to state-of-the-art patient care, we're providing outstanding diagnostic imaging technology. We're also a leader in sports medicine, delivering quality care to athletes and sports participants of all ages. Visit us online at rad.msu.edu and see how we are boldly designing the future. This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Russ White.
Sports journalism is the topic now, as Detroit Free Press Spartan Sports beat writer Joe Rexrode visits with Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis.
Joining us is Joe Rexrode from the Detroit Free Press, formerly of the Lansing State Journal, and all parts in between. There's so many things that you're on top of today and in the world of reporting. Just off the surface, just talk about the evolution of your business over the past few years.
It has changed a lot. I would say even in the last 2 years, Twitter is a big part of that, but there used to be an off-season, and there really isn't an off-season anymore. We've talked about this a little bit, but really, we need to have a story every day and the Free Press about our beat. In the sports department, we have, of course, six major beats, the Michigan State, Michigan, and the four Detroit pro teams. So we have a page, too, and every day you have to have some kind of a story. So it used to be the month of May, maybe I would write 3-4 stories in the past, and now, you're trying to come up with something. You're reacting to things all the time on Twitter often. Mm-hmm. It's not like the internet's new. something would come out in the past and it would find your way to you and you'd have to respond to it. But now it's like you better respond within the hour to something.
Yeah. Like a lot of people think they can be a coach. A lot of people think they can be a sports journalist. To be a coach, you have to have a team. To be a sports journalist, people can just pick up a computer and all of a sudden they're a competitor of yours. And I'm guessing that's created quite a challenge on your immediacy to get the news, to report the news, and yet stay on the fair side of it, stay on the balanced side of it.
It is, and a big problem with that would be anonymous sourcing, because I mean there are a lot of things that if there were no restrictions that I could write or competitors of mine could write, say, well, I heard this, someone said this, and there are people out there who can use a source who maybe is a fringe source on something and will write it, and it may end up being true, but you can't, I at the Lansing State Journal, we had really a no unnamed sources policy for the last few years I was there, which I appreciated. Mm-hmm. At times it means you're going to lose on a story. I mean, mm-hmm. you're gonna have to wait until it becomes official, but I think that I really have a problem with unnamed sourcing unless it's a really big deal, a really big story, and you have the best possible source or a very, high-level source, however you want to phrase it. And, yes, there are people out there, like you said, who are competitors who don't have those restrictions, can do whatever they want to do, and that becomes a challenge, but sometimes you just have to be willing to lose. Yeah. I mean, really.
I think, I come from the philosophy that, as Joe Kearney did, that we grew up as an industry in college sports because of the beat writers being there, understanding the inner workings, seeing the practices, seeing all that goes into play. And we have to check ourselves. There's occasions where, Joe will call me and we need to check and balance, and we'll assemble the troops. We'll bring together our beat writers, we'll bring together some of our staff, and we'll sit around the table and we'll talk about the threats that are out there of reporting mm-hmm. fair and accurate news and things that we do and things that you do that are kind of creates new challenges, I guess, in the relationship because of people that are writing various stories that maybe have never met the coach, never met the player, student, athlete, kid, and yet feel that they're an equal expert as you who have seen it from the beginning.
And those are very helpful. I mean, whenever we can get together, because it's important for us to understand where you're coming from too. I mean, I think it benefits both sides when the people who cover you are as informed as possible, even mm-hmm. with things that maybe they can't report. I've always found those to be helpful. We had one not that long ago,
right?
Over at Jenison.
Right.
And I think the more communication both ways, the better. And I mean, nothing. It's not going to go the other way. It's mm-hmm. it's becoming faster, and there's more, mm-hmm. and that's fine. You just have to navigate through that and try yep. to be fair.
I think from an administrator standpoint, there used to be a pace where an administrator found out about an issue, had the ability to manage it through the system, and come out with a good outcome. And in today's world, that window is so narrow because the news is immediate. In many cases, as an administrator, you're finding out about cases on Twitter.
A bulletin board
or a bulletin board
that people.
And it's put all of us on a is the information accurate? We're both asking that same
yeah.
question. And then how are you going to respond to that information once you pull it in?
Because one of the things about beat writers is a sense of context and a sense that when you know people and how the programs are run, you have a sense about whether the needle is sort of pointing in the right direction. If you don't know anybody and you have no context except somebody puts up and says X mm-hmm. on either through Twitter or on one of these message boards that –
right.
People must have a lot more time in their life than I do.
As a consumer, you're asking yourself, it's on Twitter, so is it true?
Versus
Joe tweeted it.
Right.
So is it true? And I think you have to have a different barometer out in the public, depending on where that information is coming from.
Well, that's a good point on context because, just for example, say like a football player transfers. Maybe if you've been covering the beat, maybe you know the depth chart situation or this particular person was homesick or whatever the case may be. You talk to a coach off the record and understand the situation. But if you're an outsider who has no sense of context, doesn't know what's going on, maybe, oh, what's going on? Is there some problem? Is there some issue with this person? I mean, just for example, and I think people will sometimes jump to conclusions without understanding that. And I think your coaches have done a good job, too, of making sure that they do tell us some things off the record that can't be used, but it can help us understand what's going on a little better.
Well, I would use the example of the recent student who transferred from football. And one of the stories I saw on one of these clipping services that I'm a part of, you know, only said that the kid was a whatever, an X-star prospect. Okay, and then the story here put it in the context that while he was an X-star prospect, he wasn't an X-star player, as it turned out.
Right.
And as a result, he was really low in the depth chart after spring ball, and every kid wants to play. The fact base was the same. The kid is transferring.
Mm-hmm.
The one sort of uncontext, the story without a context, just said he was a great recruit.
Right.
And so it looked as if we had done something to drive away a great recruit.
Right.
And what we had was too many receivers.
Exactly.
And no, so I think that's really part of that, why it's so great that there are people, the free press, there are people like you who still believe in that beat writer philosophy.
Yeah, I think many examples. I think that's a great one. Talk about what you enjoy about your job. So many times we focus on, many of the negative aspects. Talk about some of the things that you enjoy about what you do.
Well, I mean, this is the job really I've wanted since I remember ninth grade. We had to fill out a career survey thing, and this is the job I filled out. I mean, I've always wanted to do this, and I mean, it's a dream job. I enjoy most of it. I mean, you're right. We complain about the Twitter and all these things going on, and there are certain things that are unpleasant you have to deal with, but I love this job. But my favorite thing is finding a good story and telling it. And of course, you're competitive, so you want to be the first to find a particular story. But I've written stories that were told before, and I still enjoyed maybe trying to find a different angle. The human interest story, to me, is by far the best part of this job. And it's one of those things I think gets lost in terms of people looking at this job. People are always talking about you have to be competitive. You have to have these web updates all the time. You have to be on Twitter. But to me, the ability to tell a story is still one of our biggest values. And so that's an old school thought, but I think when someone can pick up a newspaper and dig into a really interesting story, I think that that's where our value lies still. So that's my favorite thing. But I love the games. It's very fun. Sometimes I like to travel, when you put together something in San Diego and you get to be on an aircraft carrier with the President of the United States. I mean, that's cool. Yep.
And shake his hand.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Not everybody got to, but you did.
Yes, yes.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
And you're listening to a conversation between Detroit Free Press Spartan Sports beat writer Joe Rexrode, Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon, and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis.
Sports writers have a tendency to write about what's wrong with college athletics. So if you could wave your magic wand, What would you do differently about college athletics?
I've thought about this a lot, and you know what? Honestly, I've changed my mind so many times on things. I've thought, well, you have to pay the revenue athletes some, and maybe you have to deregulate everything and strip down the rule book. But I mean, it's just like with the texting. Everyone thought, well, let's get rid of all the restrictions, mm-hmm. and then we don't have to enforce it.
Right. But NCAA did exactly what you guys asked.
Right, exactly. And then all of a sudden, oh, boy, here's this whole set of new problems. So, yeah, exactly. No. And you know what? Having gone through on this beat long enough, I realize it is not simple. Hey, just do this. Change this. It's a lot of people involved and different interests, and it's not easy. I would say I think some deregulation would be good. I do think that. I think some of the rules just don't seem to be common sense rules. I know they're implied in one situation. It makes sense. Mm-hmm. It's hard to, as you know, to have a blanket policy on certain things. I would look at that. I do think maybe, the cost of living idea could be good. I don't believe in the radical ideas that, you know, the separation from the NCAA, things like that. I know some people are calling for that. I don't think that's practical at this point. Mm-hmm. I'd like to hear your thoughts on that, actually.
We're interviewing you.
Yes, I know.
the question would be for those, the question I've asked those people who proposed that. So how would you think that 60 football coaches would organize themselves?
Yeah, they're going to have to find a governing body, right?
They're going to have to do something because I don't think they're going to vote as a sort of a collective.
Exactly, right. They're not going to all work in lockstep on everything.
Right.
Yeah.
Just as a guess.
Yeah.
I think the rule book, you know, the NCAA rule book has pretty much evolved over the years from one institution feeling slighted by others. And it's an accumulation of issues. It's not a rule book. And the unfortunate part of it is there's a level of trust and there's a level of trying to legislate a balanced playing field. And, you know, I think that's created the environment that we're in. As you deregulate, it really puts an onus on the part of the presidents and the ADs and, frankly, the coaches that you're going to live in an environment of likeness. And you don't have to have a level playing field. You can be different. You can be unique. But it's going to come with challenges because as soon as, you know, one institution falls behind, there's going to be pressure for on the board, on the president, on the AD and on the coach, to make sure that you find a way to catch up and you find a way to be, perceived competitive by whoever's making those judgments. So, you know, the rule book is there. I think, you know, we're doing a fabulous job, of trying to get better understanding and a better structure and kind of move the minutia off to the side. But you're always going to have rules just because of the environment that we have to compete within.
I think
of course.
We have not, I mean, being a part of this process, it's easy to say we want competitive fairness, not competitive equity.
Mm-hmm.
So that you don't sort of define everything by economic haves and have-nots, or you can recognize that somebody can make a mistake and we don't have to have a rule to correct it mm-hmm. for everyone else. It just was a mistake. But to go from that philosophy to something that's actually in practice is much, much harder than people thought it would be.
Right. I mean, we have an industry set up as soon as a rule's made of how do you get to the gray area? How do you get to the fringes? How mm-hmm. do you use that new rule to your advantage? And that's the unfortunate part of the occupation that I'm in is that's out there. That's a reality because everybody is desperately trying to compete and win.
Right.
And I think the hard part for me is, and we've had a number of these conversations, is that if you're sponsoring sport as an institution of higher learning, you really have to put the students first. And the fact, and not just the ones that are going to go on and be in the NFL, one or two or three actually that might do that, but it's all the other ones. And as one of my friends says, but I don't watch all the other ones on TV. And I said, well, that's true, but we're sort of responsible if we're gonna have sport as a part of the university for all the other ones. Mm-hmm. Including the kids who you talk to regularly when you interview the freshmen coming in who are sure that they are the next coming.
No question. Speaking of that, you know, if you want to – I mean, obviously in our industry, we look at web hits on a daily basis.
Yeah, right.
And what really resonates, what matters, this is what we're going to cover. Of course, we cover football and men's basketball
right.
far more than anything else.
Yeah.
And if you really want to look at what's popular out there, it's recruiting. I mean, it's recruiting mm-hmm. stories on our Detroit Free Press, freep.com, the website.
Yeah.
Any sort of recruiting story shoots at the top of the list,
mm-hmm.
which I have a bit of a problem with because to me it's like, you know, first of all, these are high schoolers.
Right.
You never know what's going to happen. Let them develop into adults, get to campus, and then see what happens. But people are, you know, the general public, or at least the heavily on the internet general public is so interested in what's coming in football and men's basketball. So, you know, business decisions are made based on that. And I think sometimes what's popular isn't always what I would like to write about. I mean, I would like us to do more with the quote-unquote non-revenue sports, Olympic sports, sometimes it's a fight with that because it's like, look, you know, the money is made in football and men's basketball, and it is a business.
Yeah. Right.
But even for me, it's the other 85 guys on the football team who have important Adrian Payne happened to get a lot of attention because he's also a superstar.
Right.
And potentially an NBA prospect. And so it's easy to have what the good that he's doing conveyed to the public. But there are lots of other young men, young women who are doing Adrian Payne-like work who need to have some exposure and recognition
in
these high-profile sports.
Absolutely agree. Absolutely agree. And it's fun when you find someone and you can tell a story, and someone who wouldn't otherwise be featured.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, on the football team, you know, I mean, Aaron Bates was the punter.
Yeah.
He's someone who has done a lot of different things. He got maybe more attention for different things. Of course, he was part of the Little Giants play.
Right.
But it's like Bo Gracchus, one play and he's a star.
Right.
So there you go.
Everybody knows Bates now.
Yeah. But it is. I'm with you. It's. I do really want to try to find those stories that are maybe a little bit, you know, a couple layers in.
And I think I'm not sure they'll ever have as many hits as the recruiting story, but they can have some hits. Let me sort of I know our listeners are interested in your take on Spartan football and basketball next season. So should we be smiling?
I think big picture, I think both programs are very strong. You know, obviously, football team last year lost some close games, didn't have the season it wanted. It's tough for me to say. When I look at this football team, I think another very good defense. I think there are a lot of question marks about the offense. I think the schedule's favorable. I think there's a solid chance Michigan State is playing in Indianapolis. And at the same time, if Michigan State finished fourth in the Legends division, I wouldn't be that surprised. I think it's that close in that division. So I think it's going to be an interesting year, but I do think a lot of times it seems like you remember back to 2009, there were pretty high expectations for that team, didn't have the season they wanted to have, went 6-6, no expectations the next year, and really bounced back, won the Big Ten. And I think some of that is psychological. I believe in that stuff. I believe in maybe sometimes you get a little too high on your success, as maybe you could argue happened a year ago. And I think now there's a certain humility that was instilled last season. And I just wouldn't be surprised if Michigan State really came back strong and had a good, you know, 9-10-win season. Basketball, I think, the expectations are sky high on that end. And
a really tough schedule.
Yeah, really tough schedule in both non-conference and Big Ten.
Another, we're trying to make it tougher every day.
Yeah, I'm sure. But even the Big Ten schedule, tough one. But it looks like I think possibly one of time as those best teams, and he's had a lot of good ones. But when you have that kind of athleticism, but coupled with experience, you don't see that all that often in college basketball anymore. So I think that team could do just about anything if everything came together, stayed healthy, and all those things.
Yep. And the season concludes down in Dallas, so it'll be an interesting Final Four in a lot of different aspects.
And you'll be there either way.
I'll be there either way. Hopefully we'll have the Spartans with us, which would be great.
Thank you, Joe, for being a part of the program, and thank you for being a part of Michigan State as an alum and for covering us so well.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
really,
Joe.
Appreciate it.
This is MSU Today with Russ White on AM 870 WKAR.
That was Detroit Free Press Spartan Sports beat writer Joe Rexroad talking with Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis and Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon. To hear their conversation again, please visit SpartanPodcast.com. Up next, Kirk Heinze and Mary Wilson on MSU's Master Gardener program.
Our mission is to be your personal network for life.
Scott Westerman leads the Michigan State University Alumni Association.
Sing our love for alumni.
So what that means is when you graduate from college, we'll help you find your first career. When you move to any city, anywhere, we'll help you connect and settle. If you're mid-career and want to reinvent yourself, we'll help you find a new passion. And if you need advice, or a friend anywhere in the world, the MSU Alumni Association will connect you with the 500,000 Spartans out there that are always ready to take your call.
Join the Michigan State University Alumni Association online at alumni.msu.edu.
And thy praises
alumni.msu.edu.
This is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's your host, Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, the warm weather is here and we're into gardening time. And with us to talk about gardening and master gardening in particular is Mary Wilson. Mary is an MSU Extension horticulture educator. She's also the project leader for the Master Gardener program. Mary, great to see you. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Kirk. I'm glad to be here. Well, the program starts off with a 14-week training, all different topics of horticulture from the various, you know, plant science, soil science, integrated pest management, and each of the various areas of horticulture. And each week, the participants participate in a 4-hour session. And they are taught by university specialists. Mm-hmm. And so they get, you know, the latest and the greatest information on the various topics.
Are these programs offered virtually in every county or are they more regional?
They're actually located in various, right now it's kind of primarily strong population areas right now, but we are expanding it in different areas and also looking into using distance technology and ultimately online classes probably in the next year or two.
Well, what kind of people do you look for in a master gardener?
I want to dispel the rumor that people think that you have to know a lot about gardening to take the class, and you don't. You just need to have an interest in gardening, maybe an interest in being outside, and sharing what you learn with others, because that is a part of the Master Gardener program, because you learn in classes, and then you take this information out to people throughout your community and share the knowledge that you've learned in classes.
Well, one thing about MSU Extension, there's always been this mantra of training the trainer. So this
Absolutely.
Is a paradigm example of training the trainer. So a person becomes a master gardener. Exactly. And what do you have to do? I mean, besides taking the courses, don't you have to pass some kind of a certification examination as well?
Yes. And that sometimes intimidates people, but it's really not difficult. And yes, there are weekly quizzes just to kind of test to make sure that you're on track. And then we have a final exam. And you know what, Kirk? These are all open book. So we don't want to intimidate too many people like this. But yes, so then you take the class and you pass the quizzes and the final. And then you participate in 40 volunteer hours in your community, again, sharing what you've learned in class and educating others, again, extending the university out into the community. And then once those two components are completed, you become a certified Master Gardener volunteer.
Okay, so you've got this base level of training and you've become a Master Gardener and you've done all of this great horticultural coursework with MSU Extension specialists in horticulture. But there are also opportunities for some advanced training, I think, for people who've already been through the basic course.
Absolutely. There are various programs that we put on throughout the state, but also once a year we have what we call Master Gardener College, and that's our annual conference. And if you can imagine, Kurt, all the Master Gardeners from around the state come together. They congregate at Michigan State University, and we have all kinds of sessions on specific topics that Master Gardeners are interested in. And so it's basically an ongoing learning process in gardening. And again, just an opportunity to get together with other people that share a similar interest is just so exciting to a lot of people.
Well, this year it's going to be June 21st and 22nd at Michigan State University. Do you still have some openings or is it past registration time?
We are still taking openings and it is for master gardeners, though. Mm-hmm. So people that have gone through the training and completed their certification. Yes, absolutely. We'd love to have all master gardeners from around the state come and join us.
Any highlights for this year's program at the college?
Oh, yes. We have Dr. Jeff Gilman from the University of Minnesota coming in, and he's going to be talking about, you know, kind of debunking all these horticulture myths with science. And that's the thing. You know, there are lots of gardening programs available to people, but what we really are unique about in terms of what sets us apart is that our program is based on research. Okay, so Dr. Gilman is coming in. He's going to talk about debunking, you know, all these gardening myths. He's going to talk about the truth of organic gardening. And then we also have our meteorologist, Dr. Jeff Andreessen, talking about climate change. And what does that mean
on this
to
program.
Yes, what does that mean to gardeners?
I'm talking with Mary Wilson, who is the project leader for MSU Extension's Master Gardener Program. Mary, approximately how many people are master gardeners in the great state of Michigan?
Well, we have about just a little under 4,000 active master gardeners.
4,000, wow.
Yeah, so pretty amazing. And from the UP all the way down to Monroe County and Berrien County, so across the state.
Well, in addition to the Master Gardener College that's coming up, you mentioned international earlier in this interview, but there are even international opportunities for these folks.
Yes, and when I say international, the program is based primarily in the United States, mm-hmm. but all the states in the country have the program. Also Canada and Korea. A recent addition, and I believe Russia, but I'm not positive.
So it's starting to spread around. This good news is spreading around the
globe.
Oh,
it's a great program, Kurt, and it makes individuals feel good to engage in gardening, and there's so many community benefits that master gardeners have been involved with through their various volunteer projects. It's incredible.
Well, Mary, in addition to your work with the Master Gardener Program, you are an MSU Extension horticulture educator, and you and your colleagues have put together a lot of information available on the web. You call them smart gardening resources. What are some of those resources that people can access, whether they want to be in the Master Gardener Program or not?
Yes. Well, we have three primary areas that we're focusing on, and that's smart soils, smart plants, and smart lawns. And the resources, we have a lot of tip sheets that are available right on the Gardening in Michigan website. So if people just are on the internet and search for Gardening in Michigan, that will pop right up. And you go right to that website, and right on the home page, we have a section on smart gardening, and we have videos as well as tip sheets. Mm-hmm. So people can learn about, you know, you don't need to necessarily rake up all those leaves on your lawn. Mm-hmm. You can actually mulch them into your lawn. You save time, and you're actually adding nutrients to the lawn. And what's really interesting is there's MSU research to prove that also by mulching your leaves into your soil, you can also reduce your weed problems. And things like raising your mowing height and reducing the amount of pesticide you have to put on your lawn. You just have a healthier turf. So there's some really smart gardening tips that we share in our fact sheets.
Well, you talked a little bit about lawn. Are there two or three things when it comes to flowers or vegetables that you can share with our listeners?
Well,
commonly asked questions?
Well, one of the things, and I'll go back to our smart gardening focus areas, would be the smart soils and to make sure you get your soil tested.
Mm.
And that's always
absolutely
good. And it's also a good idea not only for growing healthy plants, but it also is good for our environment to make sure you don't put down too many nutrients, and especially phosphorus, because phosphorus can damage our water quality.
Yeah.
For plants, one of the focus areas is we're focusing on native plants and plants that have lower input, but yet still provide the beauty to our home gardens and our community gardens as well.
Mary, one question that a lot of listeners have, and this is one over your career since you were a student at Michigan State to now, the interest in organic gardening, has that grown? Has it stabilized? Where is that compared to what may be called more conventional gardening?
Well, there is a lot of interest in organic gardening. And I think, you know, it's not only organic gardening, because sometimes people don't fully understand what organic gardening is. But one of the things that In fact, we have always promoted is least toxic pesticides, right. and using other practices besides pesticides, because you can use maybe cultural practices. You can use there are biological control products that you can use that are much safer for the environment. So yes, I think everybody is more environmentally conscious, and it's just a really important gardening strategy that we try to promote.
Well, as you mentioned, the Gardening in Michigan website is a rich repository. I took a look at it myself. You mentioned soil testing. There's an interpretation yes. website just for soil testing. There's an Ask an Expert. There are all sorts of features there That's that people great. Can access.
Yeah, and basically, Kurt, with the, you mentioned Ask an Expert, and if people want to go to the Gardening in Michigan website, they can see what I'll just call a little box or a little area on the homepage, where if you have a gardening question, you can go ahead and type it in, and your question, along with images, if you'd like to upload an image, will go to a gardening expert in Michigan, and we'll answer your question within 48 hours. In
you
fact.
And your team, you're excellent yes. horticultural educator.
Yes,
too.
And we have master gardeners involved helping us.
Oh, what, another way that the master gardeners
absolutely.
Can volunteer their
absolutely.
Their services.
And we also have a toll-free hotline that people can call as well.
Well, I've been talking with Mary Wilson. Mary's an MSU Extension horticulture educator. She's also project leader for the very, very successful Master Gardener program. Mary, always good to see you.
Likewise, Kurt. Thank you so much.
That was Greening of the Great Lakes with Dr. Kirk Heinze on MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Find more online at greeningofthegreatlakes.com.
I'm Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. Whether you're moving across town or across the country, relocating to a new job or a new city is always a challenge. When you join the MSU Alumni Association family, wherever you go, you'll have an instant circle of friends on hand to help you get settled and get connected. With more than 100 clubs and affiliates around the world, there's a Spartan in just about every city. And as an MSU Alumni Association member, you'll quickly feel right at home. Wherever you go, community, connections, careers, and class, four great reasons to visit alumni.msu.edu today to activate your membership in the largest Spartan organization in the world. That's alumni.msu.edu, the Michigan State University Alumni Association, your personal network for life.
The Michigan State University Department of Radiology is a leader in MRI, imaging research, and patient care. From world-class research to state-of-the-art patient care, we're providing outstanding diagnostic imaging technology. We're also a leader in sports medicine, delivering quality care to athletes and sports participants of all ages. Visit us online at rad.msu.edu and see how we are boldly designing the future.
Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Please visit us online at SpartanPodcast.com and join us every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock for MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.